the news track. This workshop's called What's the Story? And we just wanted to introduce ourselves real quick and have a quick go-around. Actually, because this is being webcasted, people need to come up here and introduce themselves really quick and just name where you're from and maybe how long you've been doing radio, just so we have a sense of, you know, who's in the room and how much experience there is out there. So my name is Philip Babich. I'm the managing producer at the National Radio Project. Been in that position for about 6 years. We produce several shows. Our main show is called Making Contact that goes out to community radio stations and public radio stations across the country, about 160 right now. That includes a couple dozen in Canada as well. And so I'll leave right there and introduce yourself.
My name is Dave Goodman. I've been a reporter and an independent producer. This is my 21st year working for Pacifica and many other radio stations. And I currently am the managing editor of the Boston Community Reporters Project, which is an independent news bureau and media education center.
And my name is Gretchen. I came out of the Seattle IMC for the World Trade Organization ministerial meetings there. Helped coordinate an audio team there for audio coverage of that, and have been doing webcasting since then, and am currently based at CKUT in Montreal doing community news there. So some of the handouts that you've got specifically address doing street interviews, because that's where most of my experience is in the streets.
I'm Bob Lederer. I'm the co-producer of a weekly health program at WBAI in New York City, and I've been on the air for about 10 years, but only recently branching out into a little bit of news.
Jonaki Lafise from KGNU in Boulder. I'm very new to this. I started last October, but I've got into it very intensely, and I produce Hemispheres, international story interviews, and I've done a couple FSRN things, and I do news at KGNU, and my background is telecommunications, and I am very interested in working on issues of women, not feminism, but women around the world.
I'm Jim Hickey, and I'm doing news for WRFG, Radio Free Georgia, and for Free Speech Radio News, and upcoming projects for National Radio Project, and I have been a writer for 30 years, but I've only been doing radio for about 3 months.
Hi, I'm Lainey Santoro from WJFF here in the Catskills. My main occupation is mom, and I'm trying to learn how to be a better volunteer at WJFF.
Hi, my name is Sevilla Mann. I've been a volunteer and a producer for about 3 years at WEFT in Champaign, and I've only done a little bit of news with our independent media center in Urbana-Champaign.
Hi, my name is Brent McDonald. I'm also a volunteer at WEFT in Champaign, and just relatively just new to radio. Just over the past year, I've been involved with public affairs and some news production with the IMC there, and just recently moved to Berkeley, California.
John Riley, WBAI, working with Health Action as a reporter.
Hi, I'm Eleanor Ostrinsky. I'm an independent radio producer. I've been working with whoever will take my story. And I also have a current events show on Brooklyn College Radio. I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
I'm Heather Candon. I'm from WERU in Maine, and I am the youth radio coordinator there. We're just starting to build a youth radio project. I've been involved with the station as a volunteer for a few years, but now I'm on full-time staff member there. So,
Mohammed Mafi, I'm also new. The last few months I have helped others in WRPI, and I hope to have my own program called From a Different Angle starting September.
Hi, I'm Dawn Zuppelli from Rochester, New York, Independent Media Center. We have no radio experience as of yet. So.
Hi, my name is Keith Rosendahl. I'm one of the news directors at KCSB in Santa Barbara. And have a year there I've been in radio 15 years, mainly as a music programmer, music director, and things like that. And I'll be working with a lot of you in the news track, but probably learning from lots of you because I don't have much experience yet.
Hi, my name is Ginny Brown. I'm News and Public Affairs co-director with Keith, and I have even less experience in news than he does. And although I do have experience in print journalism, and this summer I was working on a youth radio project at UCSB in conjunction with a university outreach program, and I think that's all I was going to say.
Okay. Hi, I'm Melinda Tuhus. I've been a print reporter for about 15 years, and the last year or two I've gotten involved in radio work. I work do stories for Free Speech Radio News and for Between the Lines, which is produced out of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Hi, Jim.
Anybody else?
Yeah, really. Christy Rupp. I'm a local listener here and a volunteer at BAI. I'm a visual artist and interested in getting more of a linkage between visual art and radio, because I think visual artists are like addicted to radio. We really need it bad. They need us too.
Hi, my name is Joseph Hermada. I work with the CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and I host and produce a program. It's called the Lukwa Palestinia, the Palestinian radio program from Montreal.
Good group of people, lots of varying experiences. Is that all the introductions? Yeah, I think we got everyone over there. There we go.
Hello, I'm James Harbison. I'm new to radio, and I'm glad to be here. All right.
Cool. Okay. So I want to say a few words about what is a story, it's a fairly, I would say, it's a subjective, you know, question and answer. What is a story? And there's a few different ways to approach it. There's a news answer to that, and sort of a feature answer to that. And actually, that reminds me that this group is supposed to break up into two groups and take on the task of actually producing a story between now and, I guess, for air on Sunday morning. As we're talking, you may want to think about which group you want to be a part of to produce a news story, and the subject matter is the GRC. So news story on the GRC, or somewhat of a feature story. So I guess maybe what I'll do is I'll say a few words about what a story is, or what constitutes a story, a bit about structure and some fundamentals. And then David, why don't you say a few words also, and Gretchen as well. And then Gretchen's going to talk about miking techniques and interview techniques. And then maybe we can have a kind of brainstorm about what are some potential story ideas that we might want to take on as a project, two story ideas, a feature story idea and a news story idea. And then the rest of the handout that I passed along is the process of kind of working through. It's titled a documentary workshop, but the elements, the nine steps, work for working on a news or a feature story as well. So starting with first thing, how to create a story idea. And I wrote down just a few basic ideas behind it. A story idea should make itself easily available to a logical progression of events and ideas. It should be connected to something that is currently happening, but has roots in broader concepts and has potential for historical meaning. So what do you mean by logical progression of events and ideas? Well, you can look at it chronologically, a beginning, a middle, and an end. You can quickly get to that, ask yourself a few questions about your story idea. Does it have a beginning, middle, or an end? And then if you don't really have an answer to that, then it's probably just an idea, perhaps, or a theory or a concept. So, for example, you may want to do something on the free trade area of the Americas. I want to do a story on FTAA. Well, that's great. Does that have a beginning, middle, and end? Yes, it does, if you're going to talk about the entire FTAA and the entire process and when it began and what its relationship is to global trade in general. That's sounding more and more like a pretty big topic and not necessarily a feature piece or a news story. Maybe you want to zero in a little bit more. So a couple examples that I wrote down, at least in some of the recent programs that we've done, that really lent themselves to good story ideas, I thought. One had to do with a controversy over genetic contamination of corn crops in Mexico. There was a big uproar in the scientific community over an article that was published in the November 2001 issue of the journal Nature, the prestigious journal Nature, where researchers had claimed that that genes, genetically modified genes, were contaminating indigenous crops. Well, the biotech industry went haywire. They just couldn't stand to hear that. And also some reputable scientists went haywire as well and started looking into it, and they found some flaws in the science. What was interesting about it is that no one was objecting that it was highly possible, in fact, likely, that gene contamination was happening. Corn's one of those crops where it can happen quite easily, at least theoretically, but the science wasn't quite razor sharp. And so there are concerns about that. So it was an interesting controversy. Wasn't quite enough to make it a story, for at least for making contact. But what did make it a story is that one of the researchers who had published the initial report in the journal Nature went down to Mexico to visit with indigenous farmers to see the impacts of, you know, gene contamination and what they were saying, how it was affecting their culture, how it was impacting their food, et cetera. And we had a correspondent who was going down there as well, tape recording it. So it was a perfect story, you know, controversy over a prestigious article in the journal Nature, et cetera. You know, researcher goes down to Mexico. You know, our correspondent goes down to Mexico. They meet with indigenous farmers. They're walking through corn crops. They're, you know, we get the sounds of corn scooping and corn rustling and husking and everything else. Researcher walking through the fields, indigenous farmers pointing out things. So it was a great story. It really lent itself to be a good story. It had a beginning, middle, and end, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one example. In news, you know, sometimes you want to be looking for what we would call, I guess, a news peg. So what's a good example? Something going on these days. Lots of stuff going on, actually. That, you know, the general topic could be along the lines of questions about civil liberties in the United States, but how do you zero in? What do you want to start looking for? And you may start picking away at aspects of, say, the USA Patriot Act and look for some specific examples that give more surveillance rights to law enforcement authorities, that sort of thing. Maybe you want to take it a little bit further. Well, that's still pretty broad. How do I zero in? Well, maybe you can find someone who actually experienced an intrusion of their civil liberties, you know, FBI officers knocking on the door, et cetera, and there are a few examples of that coming by visiting. Hey, what's that, you know, poster doing up of George Bush, you know, and there was one example, I can't remember some of the details, but the woman had a picture of George Bush, and I think she had the FU symbol over George Bush's picture, and someone could see it through her dorm room window on a college campus. It led to a phone call to FBI agents. They ended up coming by and visiting her and asking questions. So it's a good story, you know, interesting, perfect example of, erosion of civil liberties in the United States. So you want to be able to ask yourself some questions. How do you zero in? How do you get to the specific details, the who, what, when, why, where, et cetera? So I'll leave it at that for the moment. Dave, you want to add a couple things to that?
Sure. Just a couple of points, but I think these are important. I think it's very crucial to think of what you're doing as storytelling. I mean, we throw that word around a lot, the word story. I'm doing a story for Making Contact or Free Speech Radio News. But we don't often think enough about the fact that it's storytelling in a way, in the same sense as you go to a performance of a person telling a story. And there are some of the similar elements in a news report or a feature report that are in a story. There's tension, there's anticipation, there's sometimes there's often a tagline that a punchline, like in a joke sometimes. So it's important, I think, when you're crafting what you're doing this weekend, to think of yourselves as storytellers. A couple of just other quick things. One of the most important things that was ever told to me, and I learned this while working as an intern in college at WLIR on Long Island, was the concept of KISS. Keep it short and simple. If you can, that's one of the hardest things to do, because you can approach a story, you know, and it's sometimes much easier to tell a story in 15 minutes. And if you've got your own radio show and it's a 2-hour long show, you got 2 hours to tell it. But if you go to Philip, you know, pitching a story, you know, you've got to tell that in 5 minutes or 6 minutes. So once you can do keep it short and simple, then it becomes even easier to branch out and do the longer pieces. And then thirdly, you should always, in my opinion, you should always ask yourself two questions. First one is, what is it that you want to say in this story? Okay. And second of all is, how are you going to say it? So the first one is, what do you want to say is somewhat of a thematic sort of a question. And the second one is kind of structural. So for instance, in a story about the GRC, you could structurally tell the story through the experience of the people that are here, by interviewing people and asking them why they're here and that sort of thing. That would be how you tell. But you have to also answer that first question, which is, what exactly is it that I want to say about this story? So those would be my suggestions.
Yes. I just wanted to say one
thing. Sure. But I mean, so that.
I know what you mean.
So would you say that to someone who was taking too long to get to their point? I mean, you know, so there seems to be some similarity between what,
in
your context and my context.
No, definitely, exactly the same.
Okay.
It might be local interpretations. I just wanted to add that another interesting way to begin a story is to contrast the mainstream media's coverage with what you're building. So if you look at what the mainstream media is doing, for example, how does the mainstream media cover independent media? How does the mainstream media talk about community radio? How do community radio activists talk about community radio? And look at those two different versions of the story and then come from there as to what you want to build for your story. And I think that was it. That was it.
Cool. Do you want to talk about
techniques and stuff? The pamphlet that I handed out is mainly about doing street interviews. The kind of radio that I typically am involved with is mobilization radio, radio where we're trying to tell a story to inspire someone to act. And I am often not, you know, because we do have our own community news program at CKUT where it's a 1-hour program every day of the week between Monday and Friday, we're not constricted to the 5-minute stories. We have a whole hour sometimes to tell stories, and sometimes we dedicate 4 or 5 hours of audio to tell a story. For example, we did a series on Canada's historical relationship with Native North America, and the news peg there was the changes that they're trying to impose on the Indian Act, which has a whole history in itself. But so we had this news angle, but then again, we took 4 hours to tell that story of Canada's, and it still wasn't enough, Canada's historical relationship with Native North America. But the issues in here kind of cover the things that you want to keep in mind when you're in the streets. Some of them won't be needed here. I think we're going to be dry all weekend, so you don't have to worry about walking around with a towel to dry off your equipment if it rains. But that is something to keep in mind if you ever go out to a demonstration or you go out to a weekend conference or an event that's going on. Just things that you want to keep in mind before you hit the streets. So that's covered there. When you're interviewing someone in the streets, you want to be sure to mic your questions as well as their answers. And what I mean by mic is pointing the mic in their direction. You know, so when we did the introductions, not only did we mic ourselves, but we passed the mic around so that your voice would be picked up as well. Headphones, sometimes when you're in the streets and it's a really noisy demonstration, can be kind of ineffective. So you want to, if you're considering purchasing equipment, You want to make sure that you're able to see the levels. And that's one of my biggest critique of the mini disc recorders is that it's really difficult to see the levels. The Sony Pro Walkman has a nice red light, which is really easy. So, you know, you might want to keep that in mind, especially if you have trouble seeing such small little windows, viewing windows. And then I list things like for fun, you might want to jump in on a mainstream media interview in the street. And that can be a lot of fun if you get in there and there's a mainstream media person interviewing a demonstrator and you're actually getting that interview, but at the same time throwing in your own questions. And while that might seem a little pushy or obnoxious, it can make really effective audio. Talk to bystanders. For example, at this grassroots radio conference, there's not only the participants in the conference, the organizers, but there are the people who work at the end. What do they think about this conference? That might bring an interesting perspective. There are local folks around here. There's a couple of farmhouses around. What do they think about this? Talk to legal observers. Are there any here? Always keep an eye on the police. Are they here? So one thing that I do have in here that I want to bring up is talk to a diversity of people. You want to look for people of color, older people, children, folks not generally noticed by the mainstream media. This is very important at a demonstration because, you know, as you know, mainstream media typically does not represent the diversity. And as independent or alternative media, we should be there to fill that void and go and seek out that diversity. Go and seek the elders that are there. Go and seek the people of color that are there and get their comments on why they are there. Talk with organizers of this conference. Ask them what their expectations were. Have they been met? Where are things going? Record speeches, workshops like this. Record spontaneous conversations happening out there. I noticed that whenever the first session of workshops broke up, coming out of the volunteers workshop, there was a pair of people walking, and they were continuing the conversation amongst themselves. And so that would be some great sound to catch, you know? And I think Philip, when he was giving the example of the story in Mexico with the corn plants, the husk sounds and things like that, you want to listen with your recorder for sounds at this conference, sounds that you wouldn't otherwise notice without your microphone. There's all kinds of things happening here that you might not notice. Some of this stuff is specifically geared for the streets, but you could definitely gear it towards this conference. For example, I say that there's a zillion questions you could ask a participant at a demonstration. Why are you out here protesting? Why are you out here participating in this conference? Where are you coming from? What are the issues that brought you out here? What are the issues that you hope to learn about? What are the things that you hope to take back to your community radio station? So when we do a brainstorming session, maybe we can come up with a list of different things that we could potentially ask people for the news piece that we're producing. That's about it for this pamphlet. I hope it's useful if you go out into the streets. And the other thing that I handed you is interview tips, and that's specifically for doing a live interview on radio. It's not necessarily building a story. It's more of how to navigate your interview while you're live on air or in the production studio. So I hope that's helpful. That was produced by a volunteer from CKUT who's also attending this conference, Sema, who does Caravan, the Muslim and Arab Affairs program there. So if you have any questions, I can point her out to you, and her email address is there as well. Okay?
So any questions about what we talked about so far? Maybe now would be a good time to brainstorm, actually, and about some story ideas.
Will you define NewsPeg again, please?
NewsPeg. Well, a NewsPeg in a strict news sense, how would I define it? If it was the civil liberties issue, the NewsPeg would be, for example, today or tomorrow is the court hearing of the first in a series of court hearings on a lawsuit against the FBI for violating or allegedly violating the civil rights of the student who was visited by the FBI. That might be the NewsPeg, you know.
Um,
Well, let's see. That's not generally, because I think that the news peg itself, at least sometimes the way you approach it, depends who you're working for and in what venue. But oftentimes, not oftentimes, sometimes the news peg is like the last thing you come up with, you know. I mean, if you're working on a lot of different subjects and you're working on different stories, you're always kind of keeping your eye out or your ear open for news pegs that'll work with one of your stories, you know. So if you're doing a bunch of stuff on civil liberties and you say, oh, perfect, there's the news peg, you know. And then it's just a matter of writing the news peg and then making sure the beginning of your story works with that news peg. You know, so you're usually keeping an eye out for news pegs. But at the same time, you're also making sure, this is something I wrote down in the brochure, that you're avoiding time dating complications. So that would be that you wouldn't want one of your stories to go suddenly stale, you know. So if it was the civil liberties example, you wouldn't want to have a story and a bunch of tape on that particular issue after everything's all done and said like 3 months ago, you know. Then that would not be so great. But then you may be able to look for a whole new news peg and a whole other example, looking for a more recent news peg, being able to harken back to, you know, this first, you know, FBI visit on campus, and then there's this, you know, more recent FBI visit to someone's home because they were holding some meeting about war on terrorism or something like that. So I want to make sure you're aware of those sorts of issues.
Just a quick word on news pegs. There's a kind of trap you can get into that the mainstream media often gets into, and that's the short-term memory of the mainstream media. They're constantly looking for that sensational news story. They're constantly, the mainstream media operates on news pegs, and that's pretty much all they feed, is news pegs without the context. And so while you're constantly looking for news pegs and current events and things that are happening and things to build stories around, don't forget about that context. Don't forget about the related issues. Don't forget about the kinds of resistance stories that you can tie into it. You know, we're not out there providing an alternative source for more news pegs. You know, we're out there providing context and other kinds of things that are left out of the mainstream media. More questions?
Yeah, I had a question about how do you keep ahead of the timing? It always seems like, you know, you go out there and you record something, and then, you know, if you can't turn it around that day or, you know, in the next 2 days, how do you keep ahead of that?
She wants to know, how do you deal with the challenge of working on a story that is somewhat pegged to a current event, but you can't sell right away, you can't get on the air right away, so what happens, how do you keep up with that from a timing standpoint? Am I interpreting that reasonably well? Part of the answer to that question has to do with who you're working for and who you're working with and the nature and maybe the size of the story. If you're running out to do a quick headline type of a thing as opposed to a long piece, it's somewhat easier to face and meet that challenge because you know you have absolute deadlines that day. If you're working on a piece with more context, as Gretchen was talking about, you have a little more generally, you have a little more wiggle room because it's either an ongoing story or it's something that's not tied to a particular event. You can hear about this story, this information, weeks from the time you actually start developing it. It's always a good idea, though, to keep in the back of your mind, at least I try to, that any interviews you do, any material you gather doesn't disappear the day after the day after that story airs or the day after you worked on it. It becomes part of your archive and you can go back and maybe use it in some other story that's related or possibly not related. So does that approach answering your question?
The news is about now, and so it seems that's what I am always faced with. This, okay, I have this great idea, I can go out there, and then because I'm an independent radio producer, I still have to figure out who to give it to, sell it to, whatever, and It's true. I can use it as an archival thing, but it doesn't mean I can actually do the news today.
And that takes a lot of pre-production, pre-planning to figure this stuff out. So if you know you want to do a story about an upcoming event, so 3 weeks ago you knew you were coming to GRC, you'd be prepared with the questions and who you were going to speak to, so that you could accomplish your mission, if you will, gather the right information for your story and get it done within your time constraints. If something happens, a terrible tragedy, and you're called the morning of, you're called the morning of, and you need to get a story on that evening, it's actually somewhat easier in a way because you know you only have, let's say, 4 hours to deal with it. So I'm often, Randy Zuckerman from WMNF in Tampa will often call me and say, can I do a quick headline for Free Speech Radio News? And she wanted me to do something. MIT decided not to make research secret because the federal government wants them to make a lot of their research secret. And I was a 60-second headline thing that I turned around in an hour and a half, which was actually kind of easier because I knew I had that time constraint. So I had to write it and voice it and upload it, in that time. Now, another example of the type of work I do is the radio station at MIT where I do a show. We also have a local news broadcast on Thursdays, and we consider local news stuff that's been happening the whole week, the days before. So I produced a very long piece, 12 minutes long, based on a peace march on Tuesday, because Tuesday was the anniversary of the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima, and about 25 people walked from Cambridge, Massachusetts to Concord, Massachusetts, sort of Paul Revere's ride, but they did it as a peace walk. And it was still news for our Thursday show, even though it had happened a couple of days before. Does that help?
Yeah. Okay. Just add one more thing to that. I think one thing to keep in mind is that the news cycle as we know it is completely artificial. I mean, things are generated by politicians, by corporations, by the news media organizations on a completely artificial 24-hour cycle. It's today, it's happening today, everyone gets behind it. It's very focused on moment to moment, and oftentimes as reporters we can really get caught up in that, and yesterday can seem super stale. If we fall into that trap of thinking about the news cycle, things turning over really, really quickly. Well, that's all artificial, and I think that's one thing really important to keep in mind. The other thing is that that you can track your stories. You can, like, one example, I was doing a story on a presidential nominee to head the Office of Surface Mining, which is a fairly important agency within the Department of Interior. And this guy was a total weasel, and no one knew about it. And I knew about it, and I had a lot of interviews and documents on it. And so I could do a historical story on why he was a weasel, because it happened in 1993. I had all the information. I could tell a story based on everything that happened in 1993. Really easy. It's all in the writing, all in the framing, everything else. It's history. You're writing history, But for the news peg, or the aspect of making it fit into a news cycle, meant that I had to track the Senate confirmation process over and over and over again, sometimes every day to see what's going. Is it going to be in the committee? Are they going to take it up in the committee today? Are they going to vote on the committee today? Is it going to get forward to the full Senate floor, et cetera? And so things are always shifting and changing all the time, but that just meant I had to track it, be in touch with editors and saying, here's what's happening today, here's the new lead, so on and so forth. So you can also do that with, if you have one thing, back to the point about the news cycle and the artificiality of the news cycle, is that things don't change that quickly, actually. I mean, things like poverty don't change very fast, right? So you can always do a great, so-called welfare reform story, because, things aren't changing that quickly, or in a great environmental justice story, because things aren't changing that quickly, So I think it's a matter of perspective and approach, and not falling into the trap of just, seeing things through a 24-hour window.
And just to add on to that, if it hasn't been reported in the mainstream media or the alternative media, then it's not expired. It's still newsworthy. More questions?
What's the function of legal observer?
Yeah, the legal observers in the demonstration handout, how to do street interviews, are people who document brutality, incidents of brutality in the streets. And so they're interesting people to talk to. Sometimes they won't talk to you because they have a, you know, they just won't talk to the press. But you can get them to talk to you if you, you know, say, I won't identify you, I just call you a legal observer, or one person who was noting down notes about police brutality in the street. The people who do legal observation are generally neutral. Like, they're there because they understand the laws. They've had legal training. They know what the abuses are. They're there to monitor the police. So you could say they're on the police's side, or you could say they're on the protester's side. Either way, right? The police should want someone there to make sure they're not misbehaving. If you're interested more about legal observation, I do have a handout on legal solidarity, which is what the Independent Media Center movement grew out of, was legal solidarity with activists and demonstrators in the street, being there to document a demonstration as it happens so that people who were brutalized in the street or who get arrested will have documentation when they get into the court system. So I do have, if you're interested, even as a radio journalist, even though you're not shooting video, radio can be useful in the courts as well. So I have a handout on how to be more effective in terms of documenting brutality issues in the street.
Okay. From a recent experience, it's tricky if you piggyback on the mainstream media because you forget you don't work in sound bites, they do, and you can cause someone to give them the sound bite that kills it for everybody, just by asking a creative question that needs more than a 5-second answer, so be careful with that technique. Does that make sense?
Yeah, when I was talking about jumping in on mainstream media interviews, that comes out of my experience in Philadelphia, where the media were asking questions of protesters like, we hear that protesters inside of the jail are throwing feces at the police officers. We hear that protesters are carrying bags of piss in the streets. You know, those are really irrelevant questions. You know, so I would jump in and say, well, what are the issues that brought you out into the streets today? Especially if it was a live interview. And you know it's a live interview when that light's on and the camera's rolling and that cord's running to the van. You know, so it's really, it's opportunistic to jump in there and ask an effective question. And it is also very opportunistic to watch the mainstream media and watch the police. And when they interact together, you want to be there with your microphone, because there's a lot of times that the police give spontaneous press conferences in the streets at demonstrations for mainstream media. And you being an independent, you're not necessarily invited. So you want to keep an eye out on what's going on and who's talking to who, because there are many instances at demonstrations where the chief of police is in the street disseminating misinformation. That happened in Seattle. We're not shooting rubber bullets. It happened in Philadelphia. The protesters are throwing shit on the cops, you know, stuff like that.
Oh. Well, I had just been wondering if you had ever, like, been asked to leave from, like, an interview that you jumped into, or if they're generally, like, tolerating, or how that works.
They're generally tolerating. They'll want to continue their interview. There have been times where after an interview with the demonstrator, I have approached the mainstream media person who was conducting the interview and attempted to ask them a couple of questions, and then they ask me who I'm affiliated with, and then they say they don't want to talk to me because that word independent means antagonist, or, you know, you're against me or something like that.
Can all of you, I don't know if everybody in the room knows all the differences between free speech, radio, and all of the different venues. Can you talk about the different venues for us to pitch to you or others?
Actually, there's a workshop on both Sunday morning that goes over that. Different venues that are where you can pitch to: Free Speech Radio News, National Radio Project. There's also a Frieda Worden of Wings is going to be there as well, and so she'll be going over, you know, some of those things. There should be a lot of you know, available material there. Thank you, Women's International News Gathering Service. So that'll be a good one to go to for independent producers looking for places to pitch. And also, I have with me actually some handouts for pitching to making contact at the National Radio Project. And there's guidelines as far as what type of stories we're looking for, how you pitch. We're pretty specific about the way that we want our pitches to come to us, because we do get a lot of pitches. And so it's pretty clear about how to do that. And you can check it out. Yeah. Cool. Well, you know what? Let's move on to brainstorming, and then let's move on to breaking up into two groups and seeing whether people want to work on features, a feature piece, or a news piece. So what are some potential story ideas that people want to throw out there as far as doing a story on the Grassroots Radio Coalition Conference?
The effect of the proposed digitization of radio on community broadcasters and even public radio.
Mm-hmm. Good. Did everyone get that?
No.
There's a proposal to digitize radio, and it with something that's called IBOC, I-B-O-C. It's an acronym, and it's basically would put an extra broadcast on the radio spectrum, and it's potentially going to cause problems with interference with regular broadcasts and reduce the effective broadcast radius of stations that you know, maybe are low power or lower power, so that they can go maybe 30% less far, which could impact on the audience size and hence money, hence, you know, those things. And it also seems to be that it may be just a free giveaway to the big corporations that will eventually use this for transmitting communications like with Palm Pilots and stuff like that in that frequency space. That will eventually be vacated if everything is converted.
James.
Well, I know one good background thing is to get the history of why this grassroots radio started. Talk to Marty and the other lady and just get that. It's good. It's juicy.
The challenges of bringing true diversity to community radio and particularly the failure of this conference year after year to involve significant numbers of people of color.
That was it. Okay.
Maybe also a feature on WJFF and hydropowered radio as pertains to grassroots media.
Well, mine is actually along those lines. This might not be very practical, but, you know, as someone who does community news, I'm always kind of feeling like I'm sitting in this black box talking into a microphone, and the challenges of getting in touch with what the consciousness of the community is in regard to the media that they're listening to. And I don't know whether we would have an opportunity to go into the town here. I know it's supposedly right down the block. Talk to people. You know, we have a very clear idea of what our mission is, but it would be interesting to, I guess, juxtapose that with some people in the community here, maybe talk to them about WJFF, and maybe use that in a story about WJFF. Again, I don't know how practical that would be.
As far as what their needs are, or what it is that they would like to get out of media, or where they talk a little bit more
their
about
consciousness. What is community media? What do they see as being the role of community media in their own lives? And that could be what do they want from us, but it could also be what do we give to them? What purpose do we serve for them?
As you're walking around this conference, you might want to pose that question to the community media folks who are here and ask them what their community is demanding of them, but also ask them what their history is coming to community media, because you might find community members who, there's some people who, you know, who are here who have, you know, only a couple months or if not just now radio experience, right? So how did they come to that? Were they a volunteer? Were they a listener and they just wanted to get involved? So that might be an opportunity to explore that as well.
I've got a kind of a related question. Just to talk to, there's a lot of programmer or a lot of people representing stations in urban areas, and contrast that with a rural station and the differences in serving those very distinct populations sometimes. And, well, not necessarily distinct, what are the commonalities too?
More questions for brainstorming?
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
just a suggestion when you think about how you're going to formulate this story is to remember that there's a wonderful human element out here. You've got maybe 100, whatever the number is, of some of the most passionate media people on the planet, because you don't get involved in community radio for the money. Some perhaps do, but it's mostly for the passion. So when you're formulating what the story is going to be about, think about the types of questions you would ask and the types of responses you expect or want to get from these very passionate people about this work that we do.
One thing we didn't add is that we want to consider who our audience is as well. You know, what are we going to do with these stories? I mean, I think that one idea is to take them back to our radio stations and air them, you know. So think about your audience. And then back to a question that David was posing is what do we want to tell? What do you want to tell? What's important to tell our audience? Who is that audience and what do you want to tell them?
Basically, there are some real exciting developments that have come out in the plenary session last night when people were introducing themselves. The folks in it was either Wisconsin or Minneapolis doing new perspectives, new directions in reporting labor issues, you know, issues in the workplace, that sort of thing. The farmers who I found out there are farmers on the radio here at WJFF. And that certainly presents a new way of dealing with or presenting agricultural issues. And I think all of us are aware that the entire interaction between media overseas and media here, media in the United States and media out of the United States, is a key issue in that there's, if you want to look at it that way, a marketplace here for information there, and there's a marketplace there for information here, and there's nothing that I've seen in the conference that addresses that. And why is that? Is there something that we could come up with that addresses that? Because that's, you know, instead of 250, 300 million people in our audience, we have 6.5 billion.
I'd like to set up a tension with that type of question and the question of what is, how does community media shift the break between a producer and a listener? What makes a listener a producer? What makes a person want to create something and to stress the creative energies that go into making the radio rather than worrying about the ear of the receiver to make those two come together and make everyone a participant rather than a delivery system recipient model? It might be a nice contrast.
With all these passionate people around in this conference, I'd like to know if this is a good subject to see what Grassroots Radio Coalition is thinking or doing or ought to be doing for this anniversary of September 11th that's coming up, to have a united front.
More?
Actually, I'll take a second bite of the apple. The question of the rising tide of repression and intolerance of dissenting views and how community radio is dealing with that, both to cover it, but also how it's actually affecting community radio stations directly. And, for instance, the case of a WBAI reporter who's now in INS detention for the past 4 months because of his advocacy of Palestinian rights.
Those are good ideas. Any other ideas to throw out there? These are really great ideas. Which ones have we got written down? There we go.
There's an international element to this conference because there are Canadians who are here. So what's the future of the GRC if it does become an international conference? Why is it, you know, just in the United States? Why not have a North American GRC where we're actually building networks within Canada and Mexico? We can't just leave it up to the free trade agreements.
Okay, pretty good list. Let's try to narrow it down. And maybe one thing we can do is look for overlaps among these different ideas that we have. Yes, please.
Which is about the Grassroots Radio Conference, about the conference. Who participated, who joined together, what was the issues discussed, how many radios participated, from where, the locations, and the effect on the community, how much the community benefited from the conference, the economic effect, etc.
So impacts of the GRC this year, sort of thing. Yes. Good. We got history. We got the effect of IBOC is an idea. The history of GRC, bringing more diversity to the GRC, getting in touch with communities and understanding from community members what the role of community radio is for them, rising tide of dissent and the role of community radio stations and the impacts on community radio stations. That seems to kind of possibly blend with the question of September 11th, the anniversary, and what community radio stations are doing with regards to that. New ideas and issues that are arising out of the GRC, impact of the GRC, and then the line or the non-line between producers and listeners. Those are some of the ideas that were thrown out there. Given kind of what we've been talking about as far as what makes a good story idea, what, in your opinion, do you think is, you know, a couple of good story ideas, something that we can really hang on to as far as telling a good story, beginning, middle, end, has some historical significance, you know, what we want to tell our audiences and that sort of thing?
Can you clarify something first?
Hang on a second.
Earlier you said
hang on
there
just
would
one
be...
second. He's next. Get over here.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick. I just was thinking, in light of the fact that this gentleman at WBAI, who's been locked up now for the last 4 months, in light of the fact that Jose Padilla was labeled as a gang member, I represent thousands in New York City and the surrounding areas. A lot of young brothers follow my lead. Getting information that they don't get on regular television stations. Very much, they pretty much don't have time to listen to WBAI. I ain't got nothing but time now. I'm trying to slow it down. I really wanted to make the suggestion that maybe it might be a good idea to follow some of these nonprofit organizations, some of these NGOs, some of these grassroots radio stations where people are being incarcerated and harassed. I think we should have that, you know what I'm saying, have a weekly thing on that, so, you know, everybody can know exactly what happened to whom, and then be on point when it's time to, for that person to go to court or what have you, or then we go out there and we get him. It's like this brother now who's locked up for the last 4 months for nothing from BAI. I'm sure there's other people from other organizations that we haven't heard about. Once these organizations have been stigmatized and labeled, now the general public sees whatever happens to them. Hey, they're part of that group. Forget what that person have done anything wrong in that. As long as you have that label on them, part of that group, the general public, you know, turns their back, don't see it. I just think it would be a good idea to follow a lot of these organizations and watch what happens to the people.
Definitely. That's a good idea, really good idea. Did you want to add something?
Just a clarification on what we're doing now.
Sure. Oh, yes.
Because you had said earlier that there would be two separate projects. One is a feature and one is a news story. Can you elaborate on the distinction for this purpose?
Sure. Well, it is kind of a group process. So I think what makes sense probably is that we decide amongst us what is a good feature idea and what's a good news idea. Then we break up into two groups and take those on. And then what I'd like to – how much time do we have, by the way, for this session? 11:36 right now.
Around noon.
Okay.
Lunch goes from 12:15 to 1:15.
And while we're talking about time, how much time do we have for this, the piece that we're trying to air on Sunday?
Yes, that was my.
Okay, good. So I was told about 4 or 5 minutes per piece.
Oh, but in total.
Total. Each piece. Each piece is going to be 4 to 5 minutes long. Is that what you're asking?
No, and in then, total for the whole. Like, we how many pieces of 4 or 5 minutes?
Two total.
One each or two each?
One per, there's one feature story and there's one news story. Right.
Story is 4 minutes.
Yes, 4 to 5 minutes. Yeah.
But you see, this is where the discipline comes in.
Yeah.
Because if you can tell this
I mean, you've offered some very grand ideas. If you can tell these stories in 5 minutes, you've learned the skill, and then you can go off and do an hour thing. I mean, or more.
Yes, you'll have access to editing. Things are going to be set up in this room, and you've got today and tomorrow to record the interviews and work on the interviews, edit them in here on the equipment, and then get something together and hopefully for airing at the final closing session on Sunday. Yeah. I don't know what they're using here, actually. Yeah.
I see Macintosh.
All right. Okay. Go ahead.
For this collective news story that we're building, it doesn't mean that we're not going to, that you can't personally get to the individual questions and great ideas that were raised. But for this collective two pieces that we're working on, 5 minute feature, 5 minute news, what do folks want to zero in on in terms of your contribution? Do you want to do a news story? So distinguished news and feature. I'll leave that up to Philip.
Thank you.
I would say like a news idea, a feature would be sort of more of a personal story or perhaps a historical story or more of an analytical story, I would say. What's the purpose of the GRC? You know, that would be more of a feature sort of piece. You know, talking to Marty and everyone else, why did you guys get this thing going? And they talk about it. That's a feature. You know, we're telling a story about what the purpose of the GRC is. More of a news story would be something like, this weekend, the GRC decided that they were absolutely going to oppose changes or implementation of IBOC, for example. You know, and then we talk about why, what the issues are, et cetera. So that would be more of a news story. So it would be focused on a particular policy or a particular event, and that policy or event has implications and ramifications, and we discuss those sort of things. That's how I would see a split between a news story and a feature story that would be pegged on the GRC. And also one thing we want to do is kind of think of what's manageable, you know, to accomplish, you know, between now and Sunday morning to produce.
Can we think of taking this to a venue outside in communities that don't have community radio stations, so getting it as a feature on NPR?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Getting it on NPR.
Oh, to air, to think of it as like...
For people that don't have community radio rather than...
Oh, right, huh. And then would you want to actually take it and, you know, make some calls and stuff and see about getting it on?
I'm sure Philip can pull some strings.
All right, I wish I could. Right. That's a good idea, actually, and that's you know what we can think of it like this. Actually, we could think of it as mass distribution, you know, a contribution from the Grassroots Radio Coalition. We can think of it as something that we are going to package, at least put on the internet, at least send out email to, say, the National Federation of Community Broadcasters list, which is really easy, the GRC list, which is easy, ask people to pass along, and just make it a goal to, like, let people around the country know at NPR stations and everywhere else that there are these two stories available on the GRC, this really exciting and great thing.
That's bullshit.
Well, let me try to move things along just a little bit because I want us to decide, break up, and then also I want to run through really quickly the other steps in the process just to kind of help people with, you know, a little bit of a foothold on what to expect to get from beginning to end, okay? So as an editor, and looking at the list of things and kind of what's manageable and what we can do and what might be enticing and a good way to get good tape, I think history of the GRC is a broad enough and specific enough topic to take on. And within that, we can answer some of the questions that came up in some of the other topics, such as the future of the GRC and what sort of impact do people want to have with the GRC. What are some of the issues being discussed at this weekend's GRC? It's the seventh one. You know, what was discussed at the first one? What's being discussed at the seventh one? You know, we can cover some of those issues. And that, I think that would make a nice feature story. Within that, we can fit in, you know, issues that came up, bringing more diversity to GRC. You know, some of this can come out through the tape. Some of it can come out through the scripting. You know, we're not going to be able to fit everything in, but we could squeeze in a lot of issues. And That's my take on it. What do you think?
I like the idea of combining this idea of what the producers that are here and the station-based producers are going to be doing in the context of the anniversary of September 11th, and folding that together with what this gentleman was saying about the station. What a good question would be to ask people who are based at stations, what are they doing to tell their audiences about the folks that are imprisoned unfairly? So maybe even a more newsy piece would be that here at the GRC, the consensus was that community radio has to do a certain type of job vis-a-vis the September 11th anniversary, and we've got to do a really good job about informing people about the loss of civil liberties and the imprisonment of people, and how are we going to do that? So that might be a good way of combining a couple of ideas into a news piece.
That's a great idea, actually. We'd be able to squeeze in a lot, actually, a lot of current real pressing issues, be able to get some of the dissent issues in, be able to get some specifics about certain people have been directly impacted by crackdowns on community radio people and activists, et cetera. That sounds really good.
Yeah, that one would be able to encompass Gretchen's point about international aspects of this conference. There's an organization called AMARC represented here in a lot of different ways, and that sort of solidarity between community radios all over the world. They're primarily non-North American stations getting together in that organization. They practice solidarity as one of their core things. You know, they let people know when a station has been shut down or something like that. And tying in something like that's happening in New York City to, you know, that network too. There's a possibility there.
I just wanted to make the point that something that might be good for the news bit as well is a lead-in of contrasting the urban and rural, you know, because this one is based in a rural community. And so saying something about this location would allow you to then contrast community radio in urban and rural communities. You might be able to have a clip from someone speaking about their urban community radio station that contrasts with someone speaking about their rural community radio station, just a little short. You know, speaking briefly, 1 minute thing going on there. Any more suggestions?
I may be off, but I'm thinking if you go and focus yourself only on Grassroots Radio Coalition and get a 5-minute thing and put it on NPR, the people that are interested in that would be the 100 passionate people that are here. While if I'm thinking of effectively hitting a whole much larger audience, I don't know if that makes sense.
Go ahead.
The whole, as somebody that lives in this region in the summer, I feel that there's like a whole disparity about what people understand the difference. I have so many friends that say, "Oh yeah, JFF, that's NPR."
Yeah.
And I go, no.
Yeah.
No, you have to keep dialing. You have to look for that. Yeah. And I don't think people know that.
That's a real problem.
In my mind, there's a pretty clear, to sort of answer what you're saying, there's a pretty clear distinction. NPR, both NPR and, let's say, Pacifica, have a history of telling good stories, the types of stories you don't hear in commercial broadcasting. But the difference with community radio, Pacifica radio, is that we've always tried to tell good stories and change the world. NPR, maybe in the very beginning, in the late 60s, early 70s, NPR was out to change the world, but it quickly, you know, became corrupted. True. I think the core of his question was, how do we craft a story that's interesting to a general listening audience as opposed to, you know, internally amongst us. And I think that's doable by asking your interview subjects certain questions. If you ask them, what do you see as your role in terms of serving the public about teaching them about the loss of civil liberties under the USA Patriot Act, I think general listeners will want to know what this group of radio stations is trying to do for them on their behalf. So I think if you ask certain questions, you can accomplish that.
I have an approach, and I want to bring it up to this group to see if they think it's an appropriate approach. I think it'd be nice to connect with an audience. I think it would be nice to interview people and have them tell about a particular situation that happened in their life that led them to activism. And I think that could be a lead to say, like, so that you could find out this one person, what's this one person's name? You give the issue of personality, and just at least to get you into the story to talk about. So you talk, you start very narrowly, and you go out. The issue widens as the course of the 5 minutes that you have on radio. Then the people who aren't necessarily think about radio every day, when they're listening to it, they can identify with that one person and that one personal anecdote and that passion and that individual experience, and then connect it to larger political issues. And I think that's a good way to go.
I'm just noting that we have 15 minutes left, and do we have to divide people up into groups and get them planning their agenda before they come back to the next workshop with some material? Is that...
That's the case. Yeah, I think that we need to divide up right now, and then actually select the story ideas, divide up, and then be able to move forward after that.
So I've been noting some of the things that people have been talking about in terms of brainstorming here, and then dividing it up in terms of feature ideas and news ideas. So if it would be great if you could decide within the next 30 seconds whether you want to do a news piece or a feature piece. And maybe all the news folks sit on this side of the room and all the feature folks sit on this side of the room. And just hold on a second. There's a question for...
Well, I was just going to say, because I have really bad eyesight. I was wondering if you could just quickly read down...
Okay. Well, for the feature, there were the larger issues of the purpose of the GRC, what is bringing people to media activism, those personal stories, the history of the GRC, the issues being discussed at this year's event as opposed to last year's event, diversity or lack thereof at this year's GRC, the internationalism represented here, and also in the kind of language and hopes for the future. And then in terms of the news stories, the examples that were given were the results of this weekend. That might be what people's hopes are. You know, community radio and its mandate for September 11th, the anniversary of. That was one idea for a news bit. The idea of rural versus urban. That was another idea of community radio, rural versus urban community radio. And then the GRC versus NPR or in other commercial broadcasters. What's that distinction there? And that could help you build in, you know, a news bit. Like there might be something that you specifically focus on in terms of what came out of this weekend, you know, and then leading into all of that, you could touch on these other things. Again, it's up to you and your team, because it's not you, an individual, putting together a five-minute piece. It's you working with a group of people putting together a five-minute news piece. It's you working with a group of individuals putting together a five-minute feature. Okay? So everyone that's interested, any more questions for clarification for how this is going to work?
Just logistically, and I'm not sure if this was made clear at the beginning, but there's a chance to reconvene here at 5:15 to check back in on this, but keep in touch with your team all day long, and, you know, see them at meals and in breaks and whatever, and keep talking about it. You can check back.